Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming today. It's really gnarly that you're all here. When we went up to North County, I put on a cowboy hat and I got a little dressed up, and I knew that that meant I was going to have to do something everywhere I went. And in the South County a couple weeks ago, I kind of came as a tourist. And the North Coast, I was scratching my head going, you know, what am I going to do? Fishermen? Well, fishing industry's kind of seen its day. And a dairy farmer? And that's gone. A retiree? I'm getting close. I'd like to think, but, you know. And I thought, well, you know, I could surf, you know, yeah. Like I said last time, if I wore a wetsuit, I'd look like a walrus probably. So I opted for my son's surfboard. And we just wanted to give a little flavor to each of the four sub-areas of the county, because that's kind of at the heart of what we're trying to do here, is to address county's issues, looking at the specific areas of the county individually. So we're going to start today, and I'm going to ask Janice Peters to come up and give some welcoming comments. So, Janice? You got surfing?
I don't even swim. It's horrible to live in this kind of community, not even swim, but no, I definitely don't surf. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for devoting part of your Saturday to this activity. I'm really pleased at the turnout and really excited about just the whole process here. It's something Steve came into my office hours a week ago, and we had a really good discussion about the importance of all of us, especially at this point, working together. With the budget problems in Sacramento, we went to the economic forecasting yesterday and got some rather dire news that the state's really not going to be there to support our local communities, and we have to work together. We can't just be Morro Bay, San Luis, you know, I mean, all these separate entities. We've got to work together. We've got to have transportation together. We've got to have communication together, and we really have to cooperate with each other in order to survive and actually prosper. So I'm really glad you're all here to participate in this. I'm looking forward to it. Apparently, according to Bob at AGP Video, these little push-button things are great. So we'll all learn how they work, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Janice. I'm going to get this up here a little higher. This is the fourth meeting like this that we've held, and so we're getting ready to go on to the next stage. And if I get the little question, I press the right button, you can see a picture of a part of California about 70 years ago and what it looked like at that time. And we named this community 2050, not because we believe we can actually predict what things are going to be like in 50 years, but because we wanted to set a framework for thinking. We wanted to think about what kind of place do we want in 50 years, because I think the people who currently live down there, you know, 50 years ago, if they'd really thought about things carefully, it'd be a whole different place, because this is what it looks like now. And actually, I'm going to go back to that last slide. I skipped something there, and it's not going back for me. Wrong one. Technology. Go ahead and back it up one slide for me. You'll see on this slide the little tagline that I forgot to talk about, which was their attitude towards resources back then. And, you know, you can see it says, you know, water in the Colorado River, and, you know, we need it. Let's go get it. And that was a whole different philosophy about growth and development that, you know, that ultimately led to this. And there's a different framework of thinking nowadays, especially in the North Coast, about who we are, what we want to be, and what we can do. We started this process over a year ago with some workshops around the county that looked at where people thought development should go. And there's a few maps over here on the wall from those workshops where we went through a process of using interactive polling, which we're going to use again today. And through that process, well, no, excuse me, that was the summary, the interactive polling part. This part that I'm referring to now, we had people looking at where they they thought development ought to go on the map. And that's just a couple of samples. We had a whole slew of tables, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But when we got to the summary session on that, we looked at what was done in the coast side and what was done in the inland area, the counties, and we put it together, and that's where we did the interactive polling, to look at what the next steps were that people wanted to see and talk about some of the summary concepts that we had at that time. And we did this actually also at the city scale. In the city of Grover Beach, the maps that are up on the screen right now addressed the beginning of the city of Grover Beach general plan process, where the community visioned what they wanted and is now becoming the foundation for their update of their general plan, with that kind of thinking behind what they're going to be doing. As I mentioned, we had the two workshops and a sample of the North County map and the coast side map with the summary points that were developed. And that's a little closer shot of it. We found that all around the county, people wanted to see development held closer in and intensified within the urban areas of our county. We didn't want to see development spewing across the landscape. And this map, and I think we have one of these here somewhere back in the corner back there. This shows the distribution of where people thought development should go by the land use types, and you know, the yellow being single-family residential, and into the red colors for commercial, and some blues for industrial, etc. And again, you can see the distribution of, and that's every location where people thought things should go on that map. This map represents the concentration. The darker red is the more hits on that particular location. The lighter colors, maybe where there was only one or so. But again, that principle was reinforced through this process, and it relates back to some work that was done in the mid-late 90s into the year 2000 with focus on the future and designing the future. In fact, I think there's a binder in the back of the room that talks about the result of that process. And we basically truthed out what was told to us at that point in time with a slightly refined series of points, you know, basing our decisions on availability of natural resources, looking at development in or adjacent to communities, infill and compact development, housing closer to jobs, increased supply of affordable housing, and jobs closer to housing. We got to look at that issue both ways. In addition, intensifying development downtown, protecting open space and ag land, buffering our communities, and protecting our scenic views. Those were the really summary concepts that we got out of that process. And what we're looking at is taking the next steps and looking at how we can collaborate better. We need to convene our decision makers and develop a greater consensus around the principles here and keep the community engaged in this process. So in terms of also agreeing on goals and integrating those lessons and measuring development, which is the phase we're going to get to. Right now, we're in this phase here. We're just beginning to move into the secondary component of this and pull everyone together and start the conversation about how we're going to go about this. Do we want to go about this? We've already heard from some quarters that, you know, they're a little concerned that if we came up with a greater regional vision, it might request a community to do something that they didn't necessarily want to do. And that's not our goal. Our goal is to try to see what that vision is and look at how we can all work better together to accomplish it. The next box that just was highlighted is where we're looking at going next spring. Now, this slide shows what I talked about, phase one, those initial workshops, and phase two is where we're at now, what we're calling, you know, getting focused, starting to hone down on what are the concepts that we need to really put our energies into and what are the areas where we need to concentrate our efforts. Because we have an application to the state for some grant funds called the Blueprint Grant Funding from the state, and that's going to fund the next component of this. And we still have our fingers crossed on that grant funding. We haven't heard. We're supposed to hear sometime in November, they said, and then we can start work after the first of the year, provided we move forward with that. The signals we've had from Sacramento have been pretty good. Looks like we will be able to move into that stage of the game in which we're going to look at defining the directions and solutions that we've outlined in the initial stages, and then ultimately move into where we can get consensus and agreement between jurisdictions and CSDs and the county to look at how we begin to implement these things. So this is more of a detailed diagram of the process that we're embarking on. We've already been through, I got to get the laser pointer here. We convened elected officials last June in each of the four sub-areas to talk about the scope of what we wanted to try to accomplish. And then we set up these meetings, and we're going to go back to them. Actually, we convened a technical working group comprised of staff from the county, from the Cal Poly's Landscape Architecture Lab. And while I'm mentioning that, I want to note on your tables, you all have some things there. The little map sets were produced working with Cal Poly's Landscape Architecture Labs. We've got one of these little map sets for each of the four sub-areas of the county. And also on your table, by the way, are some pamphlets that were related to those earlier works with focus on the future and design the future with the indicators reports that look at how we've been doing, that were part of the foundation of that work. And again, while I'm talking about your tables, there are cards on your tables, colored cards. We ask that when you have questions, concepts, ideas, things you want to communicate to us that may not be a part of our presentations or the discussion, please write it down on there, and we collect those up, and we use that when we finish this process as we gather all this information. So use that resource as well. Right now, we're up there in that little red box at the North Coast meeting. We've already held the other three, and following that, we're going to be looking at holding what we titled here a mini summit to go back to the decision makers, come back to talk about what we learned in each of these four areas of the county, and help us define the direction using that elected official steering committee to help shape the issues that we address in each of these four areas next spring. And that's going to be related to this blueprint funding that we're anticipating. The state has put $5 million for this kind of planning around the state within this budget year. Now, the funding for the second component, this work over here that will continue into next fall and next spring to try to come to some resolution, is included in some bills in the state. The state is looking to fund that next year, although that money is not officially in the state budget yet, so that's still a little up in the air. I don't want to create great expectations, but we think we're looking pretty good there, and that the state is very supportive of this. This is what we're looking to do out of this process, is to develop some kind of regional comprehensive vision that integrates and defines regional priorities and policies and looks at a public investment strategy as to how we're going to fund the things that we identify that we need in the way of various kinds of issues. There's transportation, there's open space, there's resources. The whole gamut is what we hope to be able to identify what some of our hopes and dreams are. And I would note that just recently the city of Morro Bay had a meeting looking at what might occur on the power plant site and did some visioning and talked about what the possibilities are. That's the kind of thing that we're looking at integrating into this process as we move forward. So today, you're going to hear from a number of folks, and I would want to note that we build this as Community 2050 workshops, and actually, this really isn't the kind of workshop some people expected, that they were going to be able to get down and work with maps like we did in the first series. We're going to be talking to you about a series of issues and asking you questions about them and helping us shape where we go in the future, as I just discussed. So first off, we're going to be hearing, Chuck Anders, who's here, is going to show you how to use these little devices on the tables in front of you to do the polling that we're going to do throughout the day. And he's going to review a survey that the county conducted on public opinion on some of these issues. And that's going to be followed by Jim Lokes, who's going to talk about growth trends and some of the principles of smart growth. Economic vitality is going to be addressed by John Dunn, having been a city manager and worked with the Economic Vitality Corporation, some of his observations. Followed by Dana Lilly, who's going to talk about the housing issue. Dana's the county's expert on housing, lead person on that issue. Agriculture, Brenda Auerkirk from the Ag Commissioner's Office is going to talk about some of the agricultural issues that are out there and how it impacts us. Transportation from Ron DeCarli, the Executive Director at SLOCOG. And John Hand will be here later to talk about natural resources there, and it's primarily he has a discussion on water supply in the county. And then Brian Stark from the Land Conservancy is going to talk about some of the techniques used to protect open space. So with that, and this is an old slide because these meetings have all occurred except for the last one, and you're here for that one, so I don't need to tell you about that. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chuck Anders, and we're going to try to keep moving along today to get you out of here by 1 o'clock. That's our goal. But we do want to have a lot of discussion and communication, so we might end up running a little long if you guys want to talk a lot. So we're open to that. Chuck?
Good morning. Let's give Steve a big hand. He's really worked hard to put this together. What we're going to do this morning is we're going to use some interactive polling technology. So everyone, in order to participate, needs to have one of these. And there's usually three on a table. There may be some folks in the back that don't have any. If that's the case, we'll get one for you. So who doesn't have one? How many of you have seen I Want to Be a Millionaire or America's Funniest Videos where the contestants or the moderator ask the audience what their opinion is of which video is the funniest, and they push a button and all of a sudden you see the results? Has everybody seen that? Well, we're going to use a more sophisticated version of that today, and this technology provides the opportunity for you to express your opinion individually and anonymously and immediately see the results of the group as a whole and various demographic groups, if we wanted to look at that. So before we get started, we need to collect some background information so we can get a sense for who's all here. And you, as meeting participants, can also get a sense for what's the makeup of this meeting. Who are all of these people and what kind of groups do they fall into? So let's get started. And the first question is, where do you live? And so how you use this technology is to press the number on the keypad that corresponds to the correct answer for you. Yes? This is where you live. And a couple of hints on how to use these. If you just press the number, you don't have to push too hard, and you'll see the number you press come up in the little red box. And when that number, when the system, there's a base station over there that collects the information and sends it to my computer. When that is collected, the information, the number goes out. Yes? Okay. Sure. Okay, everybody. Push the number that corresponds to the correct answer for you. And don't hold it down, because when you hold it down, you make this little box a machine gun, and it just shoots all kinds of data out, and it actually slows things down. Yep, everybody? Push their answer. Now, we're also registering the keypad, so go ahead and push the same answer again. Just push it again, make sure everybody gets registered. And just to make sure, do it one more time. This is just a test to see if you're actually pushing the same answer. Okay, so looks like we have 48 people here participating. Next question is, do you live in an incorporated city, a town, or a rural area? So press the number that corresponds to the correct answer for you. Try to get out of your way here. Now, if you see a keypad number down at the bottom, that means that the system's waiting for your answer. Next one, where do you work? And if you haven't figured it out real quick, the goal is never to have your keypad number show up in that box. Pretty soon, people are starting to chant your keypad number. How long have you lived in San Luis Obispo County? Number 55. Go ahead and press your answer again, 55, just to make sure. Now go ahead. Next question. What is your household income? Now, this is actually confidential and an anonymous process. So people can be pretty free with the information. Number 93. Go ahead and press C and press your answer again, 93. There we go. Do you own your own residence? Yeah. Do you hear that? A little bit of it? A very little bit. What is your gender? We can actually see if the guys and the ladies see issues the same way or not, which can be very interesting sometimes. Number 75. Press the C and press your answer again. There we go. What is your age? And I promise you this is anonymous. That's the next question. How did you guess? What's your weight? What is your racial or ethnic background? What stakeholder group best describes your participation in this meeting? And last one, did you participate in any of the previous 2050 workshops? And that's the regional workshops, not the meetings in this round, but that's the regional workshops we had in the spring and summer, or the summit meeting. Too late. First answer is always the correct answer in this process. Okay, let's take a look at the makeup of this group. So it looks like 56% of you are from the North Coast, and we have representation from North County and San Luis Obispo. It's probably, we can see, there may be, we've got one person here snuck in from South County. Do you live in an incorporated city, town, or rural area? So 50% of you, over 50%, live in an incorporated city, and 44% in an unincorporated community. Where do you work? Well, we've got about a third to North Coast, third in San Luis Obispo, and about a third of you are retired. How long have you lived in San Luis Obispo County? Well, we've got a really interesting combination of relatively new folks and folks that have been here for quite a long time. Household income. We've got a real good distribution of household income among all the participants. Good cross-section. Do you own your own residence? 70% of the people here own their own residence, or as one gentleman pointed out, a portion of their residence. Gender. Well, the ladies outnumber the guys, 60-40. I think this may be the first meeting where we have more ladies than men. Age group. As in many of the other meetings, the majority of the participants are 40 to 65 years old. We do have all age groups represented. Ethnicity, predominantly white. Stakeholder group representation. We have got, let's see, we can see the numbers. We've got 6 elected officials and 10 folks here that are on advisory committees or appointed boards. 5 from other governmental organizations. 4 people from business, 1 nonprofit, some students, and some folks here just participating as private citizens. And we've got 7 folks who participated in the spring workshops, but most of you haven't. So this is perhaps your first exposure to this ongoing dialogue. So that's a cross-section of who's here and who's going to participate in the rest of this meeting. We also have some other questions we'd like to ask you before we hear from some of our speakers. And what we're going to do today is we've got a great group of extremely knowledgeable speakers here that can give us incredible insights into growth and the future of this county. And then we're going to ask, after they speak, we're going to ask you some questions and get your opinion about some of the issues that they talked about. And then we're going to talk about, you're going to talk about, why it might be that you hold those opinions. So we're looking at three activities. First, learning and knowledge provided by our speakers. Then collecting your opinions using this technology, and then having a discussion about your opinions and why it might be that you have an opinion or perhaps have differences of opinion within the community. We have another great opportunity because just a few weeks ago, the county coordinated with Opinion Studies, and Robin Letters is here today. She's a member of this community. And they did a telephone poll with approximately 400 participants. And what they did is ask some of the questions associated with future growth. And we have the opportunity today to ask those same questions of you and actually see if the participants in this meeting and your opinions here, participants that are willing to get up on a Saturday morning at 8:30 and spend their whole Saturday morning talking about growth in the future of this county, if your opinions are in alignment with the opinions of a random telephone poll within the county, countywide, and also in the North Coast area. So what we're going to do is have you take that poll using the technology, and then we have to do some math and so on so we can show the comparisons. And at the end of the meeting, we're going to show you how your opinions rated with the countywide and the North Coast results. And also, these results, to my knowledge, have not been published yet. So this is maybe one of the first times that you see the results of this poll. The first set of questions deals with community issues of traffic congestion, population growth, jobs, housing, development in rural areas, and quality of life. So the question that we would like you to answer is, how serious is this issue in the areas that you're most familiar with? And we're going to ask this question in exactly the same way that they were asked of the telephone respondents. So on a scale from 1 to 9, where 1 is it's not a problem at all, where 9 is an extremely serious problem, and any one of the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in between, you can press any of those, how would you rank the seriousness of traffic congestion in the areas that you're most familiar with? Now, in order to keep things going, we are going to give you 20 seconds to answer this question, and when that red bar reaches the bottom, the system will automatically move forward whether you've answered or not. So make sure you answer. Hurry, beat the bar. There we go. Population growth. How serious is population growth in the areas that you're most familiar? Just the area you live in, basically, that you're most familiar with. This is how the question was asked. Lack of well-paying jobs. Hurry, hurry, hurry. I got it. Not enough housing priced for the average worker. Too much development in rural areas. And declining quality of life. Okay, next set of questions that were asked in the survey are First question is, and I'll stop the bar until we read everything, which of the following best reflects your opinion about how city governments and the county should cooperate on land use and growth issues? Do you think they should cooperate more closely than in the past, about the same as in the past, work independently, or you don't know or don't have a preference? Next question. Do you think that local governments should match plans for new housing with plans for job growth in a specific area, or should they plan for new housing even if not many jobs are planned in that specific area? Well, you guys are fast. You're the fastest group we've had so far. How small or large an area should planners be thinking about when making plans for housing and job growth? Do you think that local governments should plan to match growth in jobs and affordable housing? Do you think it is better to steer growth toward undeveloped rural areas or already developed communities, both, neither, or you don't know or don't have a preference? Okay, we have a limited water supply in San Luis Obispo County and the growing need for affordable housing. Which of the following options would you be more willing to accept in addressing these two shortages? Would you choose to conserve water, pay for additional water, limit growth to match existing water supply, or you don't know or don't care? Should local government allow new cities to develop next to existing ones, or plan to retain open land between cities? People say there are trade-offs in choosing local community to live in. Other things being equal, which of the following would you prefer? Would you prefer a single-family detached home on a large parcel of land which is not near any park, shopping, schools, or work, or a single-family detached home on an average or small parcel near park, shopping, schools, or work? Another trade-off question. People say there are trade-offs in choosing local community to live. Other things being equal, which would you prefer? A neighborhood that is a mix of single-family homes, apartments, and condo projects near parks, shopping, schools, and work, or a neighborhood of single-family homes only, which is not near parks, shopping, schools, or work? Okay, we've got one other question, and we're going to put you to work. If everybody will take your packet and pull out this, I guess it's called a salmon color sheet. And right on the front, right at the top of the first page, you'll see where it says profile questions, countywide survey. Take out a pencil or a pen or any other creative marking device you might choose to have. Goldenrod? Okay, I've been corrected. This is goldenrod. Favorite color, PTA moms, right? Okay. Okay, and what I'd like you to do is look at the list of items. These are developing more transportation choices and less dependence on cars, creating more walkable communities with housing mixed with parks, shopping, or schools, increasing affordable housing supply, protecting the environment, and developing communities with housing near jobs. Answer this question. County and city planning groups are asked to focus on many different issues. How would you rank the following issues? Before you start, identify the highest priority issue and put a 5 beside it. A 5 is the highest priority. Then identify your lowest priority issue and put a 1 beside it. Now your second highest priority, you would put a 4, and your third highest priority, a 3, and so on. Okay? We will do it when we start. Does everybody have a clicker now? We had some new people come in. We have more clickers, we just don't have them out. So I think everybody should be set. Has everybody got their test filled out? Okay. Now we're going to collect your answers, and the way we're going to do that is we're going to go through each one of these and for item A, developing more transportation choices, press the number on the keypad that you've written next to that item. So if you said it was the most important, it was a 5, you'd press a 5. You said it was the least important, you'd press a 1. Whoops. Hold on a minute. Okay, so we're back on number one, A. Yes, we're going to do that. Yes. Nope, I erased those. We're starting over. So everyone, go ahead and press the answer that you identified for this particular item. And for the new folks, you just press the key on the keypad that corresponds to the number that you chose. Now, since we got some new folks coming in, we're re-registering the keypads, so go ahead and press your answer again. Just make sure everybody gets collected. And just to be sure, one more time. Okay, I think we've got everybody. Next one, creating more walkable communities with housing mixed with parks, shopping, and schools. Number 54, beat the bar. All right. Increasing affordable housing supply. Protecting the environment. And developing communities with housing near jobs. Okay, now we're going to work on that data, and at the end of the meeting, we'll come back and we'll show how your results, and we'll actually show you directly how your results compared with the county as a whole and the results from the telephone survey from the North Coast area. Okay? Now we get into an exciting part of the program. We're going to hear from some really informed speakers. And the first speaker that we have is Jim Lopes. He's a planner with the Planning and Building Department with San Luis Obispo County. And Jim is going to talk to us about growth trends in the county. Jim? Yes. All these results are going to be available from all four of the meetings to the public. So the other thing you can do is watch cable TV, because this is going to be rebroadcasted on cable, and those results are going to be shown on the cable show too.
Thank you. Feel free to get up and take a stretch or help yourself to our continental breakfast of sorts. And if you feel the need, the rooms in the back are for you as well. So I'll just continue on here. My job today is to let you know a few things about trends nationally, statewide, and locally that sort of frame the discussion of other speakers today who will talk about those issues in depth. I'm Jim Lopes from the County Planning and Building Department. I've been a planner there since 1975. I started out in Morro Bay, commuted to San Luis Obispo, and had the rush hour commute of about 10 cars competing to get to San Luis Obispo. Some of you remember that. Now it's about 20 or 100, somebody said, and I agree. Can you hear me back there? Okay, is that better? Can you hear that now? Can you hear me now? Well, maybe I should turn. Oh, is that better now? Okay, I think somebody turned it up. Thank you. Looking at population in the state, we have massive population increases throughout the state, and that is a problem in providing affordable housing for people. Housing in the state is increasing at a rate that's much slower than population, than the need for it. And we'll take a look at economic development as well as community identity and livability and trying to reduce sprawl. Statewide, about 220,000 new dwellings need to be added to the state each year. Roughly only 140,000 dwellings were built a year between 1990 and 2000. A limited supply and high demand are continuing to drive higher housing prices, as we all know. Looking at the state, the major growth areas, Bay Area, Southern California, as well as the Central Valley, surround the Central Coast and basically provide some pressure on this area. This is the area where people like to retire to come to if they can get a remote job location and perhaps even move their business here. Some of those areas are shown on this table. The table has Fresno, Riverside, and Merced areas shown with projected growth for 10-year increments and showing, for instance, in Riverside, a 39% increase by 2010, and I'm sure it'll meet it. Our area is projected to grow much slower, as you see at the bottom of the table, only 11% or 12% in 10 years, and we'll probably meet that as well. Even though we're growing at a slower rate, we have some resource and service issues, as we all know, that do constrain growth rate. And so as growth continues here slower, we still have to grapple with problems maybe in as much detail as those larger areas are dealing with them at their faster growth rates. So what I'm trying to say is we're challenged equally as much as other high growth rate areas. This slide's a little out of date. The Tribune reported 8%, only 8% in the county could afford the median-priced home. The median-priced home is listed here as a single-family detached home that's listed by the multiple listing service. So a multifamily, for instance, condominiums aren't included in this, but that number is only slightly lower. It's about $530,000 for the overall median price to home. That's according to Jerry Bunin from the Home Builders Association. This slide is really saying probably what you're going to hear in more detail, much more, that we do need a variety of housing types to provide for workforce housing, housing for people to live as well as to retire in. Looking at how we're doing in the county, this is overall, I'm sorry, this is in the unincorporated area, so this is the county's figures. This doesn't include city figures. But you can see that very little multifamily is being built and very few secondary dwellings. In the last 10 years, about 477 secondary dwellings were built in the county in an unincorporated area. With those low numbers, then, if you look at San Luis Obispo, you see a trend that, well, you see a new number coming up here in 2004-05 where half of the homes were in multifamily units. And maybe that's the direction that we need to think about, increasing the numbers of multifamily units to this kind of ratio. Our economy does depend greatly on not only affordable housing, but an available workforce, people who can work in jobs that are needed here. And really, to have that workforce, there needs to be a place for them to live and shop. What appears to be occurring is that growth in the county is occurring at more of an older age population, and people who are first-time home buyers and so on really can't afford to live here, and that's showing up in declining school enrollment. Thank you, Phil. These trends at the tops of these graphs are the elementary school enrollments, and they're showing declining trends not only in San Luis Obispo, Atascadero, but also on the coast, Morro Bay and coast San Luis, where elementary school enrollment is declining, meaning that either younger families aren't having kids or that they're not living here, if they are. Something to think about. The trend in transportation nationwide has been incredible, with population growth since 1970 increasing 70%. The number of vehicle miles traveled nationwide has increased 162%. And that, of course, translates to huge amount of traffic in the metropolitan areas. And we'll start to see that here as well. Looking at how that is occurring, some of the figures we have here that we're spending a lot of more time in traffic since 1982 nationwide, and just in the number of miles, there's been a 25% increase just in the last 10 years. With these kinds of trends nationwide, we have to look at, well, do we have to suffer the same consequences before we take action, or do we do something in advance of those problems? So what can we do? Looking at regional strategies is one way to build cooperation, get coordinated on avoiding those problems that are occurring in the metropolitan areas. We obviously need to build a higher percentage of affordable housing. And then there's a whole scope of strategies around what's called smart growth that have to do with not only providing affordable housing, but also some other aspects of living. And I'll go into those in some detail just to get us all on the same page with smart growth. Smart growth is definitely sustainable growth, which is defined as meeting the needs of future generations as well as the current generation. And then what is not so smart growth? Well, Sonny Wright McPeak is the Secretary of Business, Transportation, and Housing for the Schwarzenegger administration. And she said the heart of dumb growth is housing farther and farther from job centers, longer commutes, greater pollution and impacts on habitat and chewing up farmland. So coming as the director of this agency, the awareness at that level is encouraging. Smart growth does protect the health of people and environment by helping people live closer to where they live and work, perhaps enabling them to walk more to school or to those destinations. It can also provide parks and open space, because that's part of the planning box that we would be in smart growth, is to make sure there's nearby parks and open space. We would want to have a better jobs housing balance within communities as well as throughout the region to reduce traffic commuting. We hope to also save agricultural land and open space in smart growth by having compact expansion of urban areas rather than extending in low density rural sprawl. What the Board of Supervisors did this year was endorsed principles of smart growth for the county. So at the county level, we're looking at these principles and how we can implement these in our planning. And looking at these, this is 5 of 11 I'm going to show you. You can see, first off, strengthening regional cooperation means working with other agencies to educate each other about several of these other principles, and then see if there are ways we can build strength in meeting these challenges I mentioned earlier to make a change in how development happens. The remaining principles the board endorsed speak not only to creating a range of housing opportunities and choices, but also mixing land uses, commercial, professional, recreational, and residential uses closer together, creating walkable neighborhoods and towns, taking advantage of compact building design. This type of arterial corridor is pretty familiar to all of us. We've been in communities where we see these and we wonder, well, I hope, you know, how did this ever happen, or I hope this doesn't happen in my town. Or maybe we think this is fine. What happens with this kind of corridor, there's large commercial or office buildings with no residential development in sight. Parking lots are usually between the street and the buildings, and everything is designed for the automobile. Another alternative is to locate residential uses very close to commercial and office businesses. Locate those all closer to the street, create the street as a public realm or area where pedestrian activity is encouraged by design and by activities that are intentional. So this also does show a light rail line for some of you who have great vision. If you look at just one building in that kind of corridor, you could say, well, here's the building on the street, but what this is doing is providing jobs at the street level, but maybe nothing more. And to then focus on this as perhaps a place where there's living units above, the businesses below serve those residential uses, and that creates then life on the street, it creates nighttime use, and it creates better security because there are more people living with eyes on the street in that area. So smart growth is one alternative to the trends that we see across the state. It has its complexities, but what it really comes down to is getting well-designed development and try to work together on visioning how those communities and neighborhoods might look, and then trying to build coalitions that include the entire community so that there's a buy-in from the community on this approach. And that's why we're here. We hope that that the county will become continue to be a great place to live, work, and play. And we hope that regional strategies will develop from workshops like this. And we have to remember that you know, we're trying our best, but we need to think differently than we have before to reach solutions that create different outcomes than we have in the past. Thanks. I'll be glad to answer any questions for just a minute. Yes, sir? Sorry to interrupt. Could you hold your thought, and Steve will bring a microphone. That way, the TV program will be able to hear you as well as us.
Steve alluded that this is going on statewide through California. Is there some plan for the results of this program that we have seen in these four communities to go with other communities throughout the state for statewide regional issues such as water or traffic or air pollution or things like that?
I think Steve can answer that if you don't mind.
I'll try to take that question for you, Bill. As I mentioned, the Business Housing and Transportation through Sunny McPeak is really sponsoring this kind of activity around the state. It's gone on in the Sacramento area through SACOG, Sacramento's Area Council of Governments, which is five counties wide. It's gone on in San Diego through the San Diego Council of Governments, which, I don't need to tell you how many people are down there because I don't really know how many people down there. There's so many of them in all their cities. The Los Angeles area has a project called the Compass Project. Bay Area has a project, Livability. I forget the name of the project area right now. But these kind of efforts are going statewide. I think one of the things that we found in the transportation arena is that the state is looking for a more cohesive voice from the regions around the state in communicating with them about the resources that they're going to put into our communities. And so they're going to be supporting this kind of activity. In fact, there's currently a bill, SB 1024, by Parada, who's a Democratic leader in the Senate, who's been working very closely with the governor's office to look at a rather large bond measure. I think currently there's talk about $13 billion in which to qualify for some of the funds within that bonds, communities are going to have some kind of a regional vision to demonstrate to the state that the projects they're asking the state to fund are what the community as a whole wants to see. It's very difficult at the state level to deal with all the requests from all the cities and all the counties and to sort out those priorities. So we are really at the very early steps of a statewide effort to begin to tie these things together.
Yes, ma'am. Over here, and Steve, can you bring the mic? Thanks.
Good morning. I see a trend in housing that to me has like a double set of values. Like people do not like or want to live in multifamily, even condominiums. Nobody can really build them anymore because the insurance, and there's been a lot of pressure. So I see people kind of talking out both sides of their mouths. In one place, as they're sitting in their single family homes, they're saying, oh, I want affordable housing. But when the government or anyone suggests that they have condominiums or mobile homes or, you know, that sort of thing, everybody is horrified. So what we end up with is apartments, which I don't consider as livable or as pleasant as having a bit of your own space, but yet nobody can build what I consider livable condominiums, for instance. So I see sort of a dual opinion here by the governments.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect of our lives, that we prefer the best of the American dream. That's what we prefer. When we go to the market, though, and want to buy that, we're finding that we're getting priced out if we're living in this area. And so I think our vision of the American dream might be changed somewhat, and I think we'll speak to that some more later. But our new vision for the American dream may be a smaller lot, a more efficient, smaller house that is every bit as elegant as a large house, or it's maybe an attached condominium that's in a project that has great amenities, that's within walking distance of a little park to a coffee house, to maybe even work. One aspect of multifamily development in the state is a large part of the market rate multifamily development is occurring at the high end of the market, so that in San Diego, for instance, large-scale, high-rise condominium multifamily projects are being built, but those units sell for almost $1 million each. And that's not saying that the American dream has to be expensive housing. I think what we need is a dream for every segment of our economy to meet.
Well, basically, my question's along the same line is, how do we keep something affordable? Because what I see happening in Morro Bay is the homes are built, but they're either sold for investment reasons, or people are here 3 months of the year, and we continue with the same problem. We have more homes, but we have the same problem. So how do you continue, how do you make something stay affordable?
That's a great question, and I don't have an answer, but I do have a point about that. When I showed you that slide of the state with the regions and the arrows pointing to our area, each of those regions has probably a million or more people that are at the upper income levels in those areas. If you think of our population, probably the upper 10% of our population is high income. Well, the upper 10% of Southern California, which has over 10 million people, is a million people. That means there's probably a million people in Southern California that are at the high end and can afford to move out of that area if they can move their jobs or they retire. Where would they like to move to? I'm afraid our area looks pretty neat. So that means that pressure continues to meet that market, then our housing market is continuing to respond with that high number of, you know, single-family expensive homes. And I showed you that slide that showed only 5 or 6% of the market is going to the multifamily or more affordable units. So it's a question that we just have to keep in front of us, is how do we keep housing that's been built at an affordable level even affordable? And with that, I think maybe it's time to move on.
Yeah, one of my jobs is to get you out of here at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, so he's gonna.
So if I press things a little bit, please cooperate. And if you have something that has to be said, we'll hear it. Okay.
I just want to piggyback on Linda's comment. You see, in San Francisco and Los Angeles, condominium conversion is the trend nowadays. And it's also here in San Luis Obispo. So there are, you can insure them now, you can borrow money from it now, and San Luis Obispo also have already put a cap on their condominium conversions. So that is a way of making properties affordable. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you, Jim. You talked about how to afford some of the housing in this county, and next we're fortunate to hear from John Dunn. He's going to talk about economic vitality, and John is a former city manager of San Luis Obispo, and also he is the interim president and CEO of the EVC, the Economic Vitality Corporation. So, John.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to first of all extend my compliments to the two other guys in the room who are so insensitive to Morro Bay prevailing values that they also wore ties. I'd like to first engage in a little, it says it correctly up here. I'm the former interim president, CEO of the Economic Vitality Corporation. By the way, one of our board members is Mayor Janice Peters, and she does a great job in helping that organization. Next, please. Just a little bit of an advertisement, and then we'll go on. The Economic Vitality Corporation is a nonprofit corporation sponsored by the county, the seven cities within the county, and many individual business firms within the county. And we're the only really economic development entity for the county as a whole. And we provide a range of services primarily on that first one. Our primary business is to engage in the creation, the retention, the expansion, and the attraction, and I would add one more, the protection of businesses. And that's a big job. Some of the more specific services that we provide, we do provide assistance with site location. We have a neat little loan program. Engage in business consulting, and then we have a trailing spouse network. And again, the work is important because it's the only countywide entity that is doing these things. Now, I add quickly that there are others in the county who are concerned with economic development and do bits and pieces of it, and particularly within the other cities of the county. Next, please. Okay, let's talk a little bit about our county. We do have, actually, latest figures I saw were a county population of either about 258,000 people. So we're over a quarter million people. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the state, and that is a very good thing. There are very few people in this county who really want to work that can't get a job. There is another side to that, which I'll come back to. Many of you are quite familiar with the basic elements of our economy. Agriculture is our historical economy. Tourism is kind of, for the last 25 or so years, kind of our new economy. Retail is very strong within the county. With the advent, particularly of Diablo Canyon, we're a very strong utilities county, much more so than the average of the other 58 counties in California. And, of course, we're pretty famous here for having very strong educational institutions and perhaps overall a lot more government employees per capita than would be true in other parts of the state. So we do have in this county over 100,000 jobs. 85,000 of these jobs, my gosh, what did I do to deserve this? Thank you very much. Are in the service economy, and versus 14,000 of these jobs are production jobs, goods producing jobs. The normal thing when you think of industrial development or industrial growth. Now, why is that significant? First of all, it's almost a perfect 6-to-1 ratio. It means that we have a very high ratio of service jobs. Now, inasmuch as the whole United States is more and more growing to be a service economy, service jobs are not necessarily in and of themselves a bad thing. They do have their downside. Now, again, where the majority of these jobs, they are in the service industry. In government, we have 20,000 jobs. Hospitality, about 16,000 jobs. Retail, almost 14. And in education and in health, almost 11,000 jobs. So there you see where the majority of jobs are in this county. Take any one of these areas, and what you probably see is that, yes, in government, in hospitality, in retail, education, health, there are some prestigious, high-paying jobs. But in almost all of these areas, the majority of them are lower-paying jobs. And so that's something let's kind of keep in our minds as we go through our little presentation. So, next, thank you. So, we do have a largely service economy in this county. We have fewer production jobs. We have a very high, as was Jim pointed out, county housing price, $600,000, going up all the time. Again, we are we don't have a powerful lot of the higher paying jobs. We have a percentage of our jobs that really belong to what I call and others call the working poor. That is, they have to have more than one job. their hourly pay. The hourly pay is low, minimum wage or slightly above minimum wage, and producing an income of, you know, 10, 20, maybe up to 30,000. But it's real tough to live in this area on that kind of pay. As we already know, we do lose. We do have a brain drain in this area. Some of our best educated have to go to other major metropolitan areas or even other states in order to get the best jobs. Lastly, I would say that we do, to some degree, lack economic diversification. Now, it's strange, but when you look at figures compared to other counties in the state, other counties are less dependent on a governmental sector and an educational sector, and they have components of the private sector that we simply don't have in this county. Now, there's many examples. I'll just pick out one as a quick example. Wholesaling. Very little of that kind of activity in this county, whereas in other areas, it's a very major activities. I think we'll knock off the slides at this point, and I'll just kind of speak to some ideas that I think are important. As most of you know, at least those of you who got up early enough to read the headlines in the paper today, in the Tribune, I realize there are other newspapers in the county, Dr. Bill Watkins spoke yesterday, and he is a leading economist from UCSB, and he does the annual county economic forecast. And he gave a very rosy explanation of what's happening in our county and some projections, what we'll say, for moderate economic growth during the next three-year period. And so to some degree, what I'm going to be saying, and I'm not saying these things to be negative, I'm just saying these things to kind of complete the picture. Some of my comments will kind of sound like anti-Watkins. Well, I have very high respect for him and his organization and his work. I just think there's another part of the picture that needs to be explained. Now, let's go back to the service economy for a minute. I listened to a genuine economist, which I am not, up in Paso Robles some months ago. His name was Dr. Robert Fountain. He's a regional economist from the Sacramento area. And he was saying, in effect, that this area is a service economy and that the danger is that we're going to become even more of a service economy in the future. Now, that means that there in a service economy, yes, there will be a few doctors, and there will be a few lawyers, and there will be a few college professors, et cetera, but that's not where the majority of the jobs will lie. And I decided to kind of check him out to see if he was right. And so I got from the Department of Employee Development from the state, EDD, I obtained a little chart. It was 26 pages long. It was more than my mind was capable of comprehending, and so I had to break it down into its component parts. But so I took 426 job categories and just selected those that were slated for the greatest growth in the next few years. And as probably anticipated, yes, for your hotel maids and your janitors and your gardeners, kitchen workers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there is great demand, and there's going to be growth in these jobs. But on the other end, at the professional or to higher paying or the more technical, yes, those jobs are included, but they're at much, much, much smaller numbers. And so the danger in the growth of our economy as it's now situated is that we're going to be producing the kinds of jobs that are kind of out of kilter with where we ourselves are, as a coastal economy are kind of heading. In other words, we're going to be producing a lot of jobs, but to people that aren't capable of fully buying into our economy, not capable of buying the homes that we have here. There's another component Dr. Fountain showed this chart, which at first I kind of didn't believe, but again, I kind of checked him out. And it basically shows the educational attainment of the people in our county. And I just kind of assumed that because we have Cal Poly here, Cuesta, both excellent institutions, that we're a well-educated county. As a matter of fact, one of the assumptions that I had, which is I'm sure true, we have a great deal of underemployment, again, with the educated class. That is, they have the nice degrees and nice education, but they can't get the good jobs, and so they're working at some job which is much below their educational attainment. But the true fact of the matter is, within the United States, California is not particularly high in educational attainment. Again, a surprise. San Luis Obispo County, compared to our other 58 counties, is not particularly high. As a matter of fact, as Dr. Baker, the president of Cal Poly, kind of intimated yesterday in a presentation, we are increasingly getting behind other industrialized economies of the world, including formerly called third world countries, in the number of engineers and technical people that we're producing. And so Dr. Fountain made a number of people up in Paso Robles very mad when he said that if we aren't careful, there is going to be a dumbing down of our economy in San Luis Obispo. And so what are we, through this service economy, as its future direction seems to be indicated, and through our educational attainment or lack thereof, what's really happening? What's really happening is that we're producing a bimodal economy. We have the equity rich who are moving in from other areas, and they're able to buy the nice homes. And we have, of course, the people who are here who have the educational attainment and the good jobs or the good fortune to have made it big in business or whatever. And so they're doing quite well. As a matter of fact, they're doing so well that collectively they bring up these countywide figures, and so we look like a strong economy. Underneath that, there is a totally different economy. It's the famous bimodal economy, which is the working stiffs, the working people who have very low-paying jobs, not unemployment, underemployment. And the people that have problems making their paying their rent, buying gas, making their other payments. And so what's kind of happening, and this is saying a little bit too strongly, and forgive me for that, but we have the homeowners and the would-be homeowners. Some would say the rich, the near rich, or the will be better off. And then we have the non-homeowners, many of whom will never own a home in this county. And they work at this kind of subsistence living, or in many cases below. The census data are very clear. We have a fairly high poverty rate in this county. It's a hidden poverty. At least one city in the county, by census figures, has a 10% poverty rate. Two other cities in the county have a 5% poverty rate. Some of that may be explained by the student population and their typically lower incomes, but that doesn't explain the whole situation. And so what does all this mean? To me, it means that despite the report by Dr. Watkins yesterday, which is based on very solid data, and I'm not in any way knocking that report, but despite that report, we have to recognize some of the problems and the issues that lie behind some of those figures. And we have to ask ourselves, is the direction that our economy is going in, is that really an economy that we want to see in our area in the future? And if it is not, we have to ask ourselves even more fundamental questions. What are we going to do about it? Now, do we have any such thing as an economic plan for our county? No. We have bits and pieces. Some people have done some excellent work, and it's lying on someone's shelf somewhere. But we don't have an economic plan. We don't really know what we want to be when we grow up economically. And so somewhere along the line, we're going to have to take all the implications of where we're going and say, is this our desired direction? If not, what is our desired direction? Now, it is a major task to define that, because that requires motivation and cooperation from a lot of varied interests. And there are a lot of interests within this county who are well off or unconcerned or whatever, and they say, hey, everything's fine, everything's hunky-dory. But sooner or later, again, we have to kind of come to a common recognition that not everything is good, and there are some things that that should be done more than we're presently doing. So that's kind of the end of my little sermonette, and forgive me if I sound a little bit too glum on the heels of a very positive economic report by people who have higher credentials and know what they're doing more so than myself. Let's talk just a moment about Morro Bay. First of all, I worked for the city of San Luis Obispo for many years. I live in the South County, and so I do not qualify in any way, shape, or form as an expert on Morro Bay or the North Coast, except for the fact that I love it in this area, and I travel through it all the time and eat at your restaurants and that sort of thing. But just, you know, real bluntly, what kind of an economy are we? And basically, we're primarily, and certainly not exclusive, but primarily a tourist economy. And so with a tourist economy, you have to have attractiveness. You have to have a reason for people to come here. It has to be a fairly compelling reason, because there's a lot of people out there competing with you. You have to have retail facilities, and retail is good from a city point of view because it gives the city income tax. You have to take advantage of your God-given amenities, the bay and the development alongside of the bay. And so there's a lot of things that the city is doing. There's a lot of things that the city should be doing in order to enhance and build on that tourist economy. And I have a theory based upon my 25 years in both Monterey and San Luis Obispo that the essential interests of residents and tourists don't have to be different. For the most part, the same reasons that attract tourists to your area are exactly the same reasons why your residents are satisfied, or conversely, the things that your residents feel a lack of are the same things that will fail to attract tourists to this area. And so I think with these hopefully semi-stimulating thoughts, I'll rest and let you answer or ask some questions. I guess in summary, things are pretty darn good in this county, and I'm not going to break the bubble that others have created. On the other hand, I think all of us as thoughtful citizens have some things we have to be concerned about, thinking about for the real long term. And so that's kind of my job today, is to help all of us kind of begin to stimulate our thought in that direction. So with that, I'll quit and open it up to questions. Yes. I'm waiting for the microphone to arrive.
That is true. I just want to say amen to what you said about the conference yesterday. I thought it was very good and stimulating also, but I thought it was a little rosy and a little generalist, and that you have a lot more specific facts, particularly about the county and our city, and I really appreciate you sharing those.
Oh, thank you.
You mentioned a term, I believe it was bimodal economy,
mm-hmm.
and I would like you to speak more on that issue.
Sure. Bimodal, of course, is a two-hump camel. And you see it in a lot of areas. Let's take age in San Luis Obispo. You have a lot of people who are relatively young, let's say 18 to 25 years old, and you have a lot of people that are 55 and above. So if you look at a population curve, for San Luis Obispo. It's a beautiful classic bimodal curve. Well, I'm speaking right now of the economy, and you have a lot of people in our economy within the county who are earning good money, you know, $80,000, $100,000, $120,000. You have a lot of people that aren't earning much money. They're the ones who serve in some part of the service industry, and they're necessary to our economy, the ag workers and the hotel workers and the restaurant workers, et cetera. They're critical to our economy, but they aren't earning a lot of money. And so when you look at the chart, you see a lot of people earning a little bit of money and a pretty good number of people earning a lot of money and some people obviously in between. And that's why those production jobs that I was talking about are really important, because they kind of provide the in-between jobs. You know, the jobs that pay $35,000 to $70,000, those are critical. But there's not a lot of those kinds of jobs, and so that's what I mean, sir, by this bimodal economy. A lot of people here, and a good number of people here, but not as many as there should be in this middle ground.
Now, my name is Ed Carnegie, and I have an observation, I guess. Through my lifetime, I've noticed a change in the family structure. When you look at our history, the family worked together, the husband and the wife, and they worked on the farm. We were a farming community. And then we had the glory days after the World War, where we went into the single family for the father was the breadwinner, and we got that as our model. And today I think we see it going back to the older model, where the husband and wife were both working. And so they as a combined are making a good fund. They're making $35,000 apiece. And so when a husband and wife both work, then they are able to purchase the homes. And I think some of the things are skewed. Maybe partly you're bimodal. You're looking at individual salaries, maybe not family salaries. And I know in my own case, all of my children, both the husband and wife both work and they're able to purchase homes. But if this they were limited to just their husband's salary or the man's salary, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate your point. You're absolutely right. Maybe instead of the incomes, I should more properly have said kind of the bimodal nature of the wages and salaries within our county.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you know of any plan or program where employers become responsible for their low-paying employees? I mean, take a responsibility. This is done in many other communities successfully, and I would hope that employers would take that into consideration when they hire low-income people. Thank you.
Excellent point. No, I'm not really the expert on employers taking more responsibility for the kind of the total well-being and the lives of their employees. I do know, of course, here as elsewhere, we have some enlightened employers and governmental employers and educational institution employers who, in terms of so-called supplemental benefits like health insurance, retirement, et cetera, do an outstanding job of providing for their employees' needs. I think what we're gradually seeing, particularly in the private sector, is the elimination of retirement plans or the conversion of fixed benefit retirement plans to other types where the employees and the employer make some kind of contribution. But it doesn't guarantee at the end of the stream that you're going to have a retirement at a certain level. We're also seeing a cutback of employers in having full-time salaried employees that they, quote, owe a health insurance plan to. And we have a strategy among some employers to not have full-time salaried employees, have part-time, three-quarter time, or half-time employees so that they don't have to pay their health benefits. I guess in truth, there's economic pressure on everyone within our society, not just the employees, but also many of the employers and people in order to, stay in business and earn a higher profit. They take those measures, which will reduce their cost, and many of these measures are harmful to the interests of the employees. And so within our national employment system, I think that benefits are being reduced over a period of time, and we have a smaller number of employers, and we have a smaller number of jobs that are in major corporations, and we have a growing number of jobs that are in smaller companies. And so the result of all that is that benefits are being reduced. For instance, in medical care, we have something like 40 million Americans right now who are uninsured, and that figure is anticipated to be in the next 5 years to be 65 million Americans. And so this is part of producing the crisis in medicine.
Okay, we've got one more question, and then we're going to find out your opinion about economic vitality in the county in this area. Go ahead.
Hi, John. My name is Judy Vick, and I was wondering what our county could do in terms of incentives to bring businesses here, and if you see affordable housing as really primary for businesses coming here.
In answer to the last consideration, is affordable housing a great inducement for bringing people here? The answer is yes. And is the lack of affordable housing a handicap in bringing people here? I think any employer of the county will tell you, whether it's the city of Morro Bay or San Luis Obispo or it's Cuesta College or Cal Poly, any employer will tell you, or the county, that they have made job offers to very capable employees or prospective employees, and while perhaps the gentleman was entertaining the job offer, while the wife was out with a real estate person shopping around for real estate, and at the end of the day, you offer the job, and it's turned down simply because they've made a total assessment in their mind that even though the job is nice, the location is nice, the salary is nice, it just doesn't provide the wherewithal for them to buy into the housing market. And so Dana, who's my successor on the speaking panel here, he'll get more into that. But obviously, the housing prices or the lack of affordable housing is a major detriment, increasingly so in the future, to attracting people from other areas. Now, the other part of your question, what do we need to do? We do need to get greater economic diversification so that we don't have all our eggs in one basket. Production type economy or jobs is a real problem, because statewide they're going down, nationally they're going down. We are all familiar with the stories of how production basically is moving to China, to India, and so I think for the foreseeable future, that is not the future of our economy in the United States, California, or this county. And so, in what other areas can we attract jobs? And I don't have the answer, and I've posed the answer or the question to a couple of economists, and the best I can come up with is, you probably start out with asking yourself, what are your virtues? And our virtues are, we're a beautiful area, we're a strong tourist economy, we have a lot of amenities, a lot of attractiveness. How can we take advantage of that? And I would say it's in the high end of various businesses. It's in the high end of health services. Elective surgery, for example, it's in the high end of the tourist economy. You see some of this happening in Pismo Beach, Avila, Paso Robles, etc. It's in the high end of the industrial economy. For instance, we produce the wheels on the Mars rover. That's That's something that isn't done elsewhere or everywhere because it requires certain very high-level skills. And so I think we just have to, again, kind of rethink our economy, rethink what our virtues and amenities are, and how can we build on our strengths in order to attract the right kinds of business enterprises and companies here.
Thank you very much, John.
My pleasure.
Appreciate your insights. Now let's find out what your opinions are with regard to economic vitality. And we have six questions we'd like to ask you. The first one, grab your clickers, and we had some new people come in and I turned on their clickers, so hopefully everyone's registered. Okay, San Luis Obispo County has a diverse economy that's sustainable over the long term. And since I didn't get his clicker registered, we're going to have to do this drill again. Number 55, 56, 75, 87 and 97, are you here? If you are, press your clickers. Okay, did you register back there? Everybody, press your answer one more time. I think some people left also, so we're going to have to recalibrate this. We've got a moving target. Okay. We are headed for an economy in which the working poor will primarily serve the wealthy. What's your opinion about that statement? Strongly agree is one, agree is two, disagree is three, and strongly disagree is four. Beat the bar. SLO County's economy needs to grow more private sector opportunities that provide higher salaries and better benefits. We should be more concerned about the national economy and its impact on San Luis Obispo County. I'm willing to accept moderate impacts to the quality of life for a project or business proposal that significantly improves the local economy of the county. I would not support any business proposal or project if it does not adequately mitigate environmental impacts, regardless of the economic benefits. Okay, let's see your opinions. San Luis Obispo has a diverse economy, sustainable over the long term. I guess you folks listened to John a little more than you did the economic report yesterday. 61% of you said you disagree that we have a sustainable long-term economy that's sustainable over the long term. Why might that be? Okay, we need microphones, so we need some folks. Someone had a comment right here.
Because we don't have the housing for the lower income people that work here for
okay.
us.
So housing is a major concern.
The tourist industry is an up and down with disposable income. And if we relied on tourist industry, it can bottom out very quickly.
Okay. We got one back there. Where's the other microphone? Oh, okay. Good.
Like the previous speaker, the point he made, we have no production jobs. Ed here just made the comment that Mars Rover Company only has 5 employees. I have a brother-in-law that works in Paso Robles that's a production job, and that company only has 20 employees. We don't have any large company that does production quality jobs, and as long as we don't have that, we can build all the affordable housing in the world. It won't make a difference.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the next question. Good comments. Pardon? Okay.
Hi. Yeah, hi. I worked for the county of San Luis Obispo and in the county as a freelancer for about 20 years. And one of the things in the county when I was working in the county, which was 10 years ago is when I stopped doing that, is that in my profession, we were grossly underpaid, as what you're saying. I was a court reporter. So out of the whole state, we were the lowest paid court reporters in the state through the county. So even though I had a good job, if I wanted to make a lot of money, I had to go to LA or San Francisco. So I had enough at that time to buy in here. But the way it is now, there's no way. So one thing I would like to see is that the county begin to, like the Board of Supervisors, just gave themselves a raise to make them compatible with 6 other counties in their pay. I would like to see the county do that for the workers here.
Okay. We have a number of county people here that trying to see if they're shaking their heads now. Okay, next question you answered. Are we headed for an economy in which the working poor will primarily serve the wealthy? And here you have a pretty much of a 50-50 split difference of opinion. Oh, I'm sorry. What? I'm looking at this wrong again. You agree. I have to tell you, this scale is different than I normally use, and sometimes I don't read the scale, so I apologize. All right, so here you agree that 96% of you agree that that's the kind of economy we're headed for. Slow County's economy needs to grow more private sector opportunities, higher salaries, and better benefits. And again, you've got almost 90% agree or strongly agree. We should be more concerned about the national economy, its impact on spending. And there's not a strong opinion on either end. And there's about a 45% agree and 40% disagree. Any comments on that? Any insights? Why might someone agree or disagree with that statement? There's a gentleman over here.
Jim Wood from Templeton. My question on it was, what do you propose to do about it?
Okay. Any comments with regard to what do you propose to do about the linkage with the national economy? Anybody have any ideas? Yes. When you say what you propose to do about it, you mean what do you propose to do about the national economy or the dependency?
We're all in the same national boat here. We're all in the same national boat. But as an individual, I don't have a lot of effect on the national economy. And I think as a county, worrying about what's going on in Washington, we have how many layers between us and Washington? I think we'd be better off putting our attention on what's going on in San Luis County.
Okay, we had a comment back here.
Well, yes, that was just my point. If we're going to try to mitigate against the problem that we can't really control the national economy, one way to do that would be to grow and diversify and make sustainable our own local economy, which I think the last surveys suggested we don't think we're doing a good job of.
Okay. There's someone. Oh, I'm sorry.
Maybe if we could improve our transportation, the connection between Los Angeles and San Francisco so we can get a lot of tourists here is to, I was thinking more to pursue the bullet train.
Okay. We're going to be talking about transportation and that possibility a little later. Yes, ma'am.
Just a quick comment on the national economy and its effect on us. If we don't get our dredging funds from the federal funding, then it hurts our tourism and everything else. So there is a connection. I agree it's a hard one to establish, but we need to keep contacting our federal representatives to make sure that they recognize our problems.
Bottom line is that at least a half of you or a good portion of you feel that we are linked to the national economy and have to pay attention to it. One more question we knew, and we'll move on, or answer.
I don't think we can possibly dislink ourselves from the federal government. One of the things that are proposing right now is possibly doing away with Amtrak. If track population is turned back to the cargo carriers, will have no rail transport for people.
Okay. Next question. Are you willing to accept moderate impacts to the quality of life for a business or proposal or project that significantly improves the local economy? You've got about 50% agree and 18% strongly agree, and about 35% of you disagree. Comments or observations? Why might someone disagree with that statement?
I disagree with this statement because if you destroy the quality of life, you significantly do not improve the local economy. And this question is a bad one. This question is basically, I think the person that made it is saying, oh, let's try to get people to accept diminishing of the quality of life so that we can have a better economy. That's not the question. You don't have to diminish the quality of life to have a better economy. Apparently these people do, and perhaps they want to push the agenda of higher density and other changes. That's what I suspect.
Yeah, these questions were designed to stimulate discussion. I think it's successful.
Also, it's a problem between the singular and the plural. If you start accepting moderate impacts for a project or a business proposal to improve the local economy, you're going to be accepting them for all projects and business proposals, and pretty soon you're going to run into the phenomenon of cumulative impacts. It's not just the quality of life impacts of one project, and they all add up, and pretty soon your quality of life is really hurting.
Okay, thank you very much. One more comment on this question back here in the corner.
Well, I see it as when it says quality of life, a moderate impact, that's totality. That's not each individual project by project by project, that each one is going to tear us down worse and worse. But it's saying a moderate impact on the total quality of our lives here in this county. And so I see it as getting to that threshold where we say this is as high as we're going to go with lowering our impact, our quality of life.
Okay. Thank you. Last question. Is would you support a business proposal or project if it does not adequately mitigate environmental impacts, regardless of economic benefits, or you would not? And 78% of you said you agreed with that statement, and about 22% disagreed.